This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello and welcome to Sports by Northwest from the Oregonian and Oregon Live. I am Bill Oram. It's been a couple weeks since we've had an episode, but we are back this week with a very special guest, Dewayne Hankins, the president of business for the Portland Trailblazers, kind enough to join us this week. Dewayne, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
So I first reached out to you 2 or 3 weeks ago about coming on Sports by Northwest, and the impetus was that you guys had just rolled out your City Edition jerseys, the Portland PDX carpet jerseys, and you started with such a bang, had a big win in those jerseys. And I know that was a relief for you because you don't want those jerseys to be debuted in a loss. Unfortunately, since we first connected, the team has struggled a little bit more. You know, it's a long season, highs, lows, ups, downs. Blazers are now 11-11 as we speak. How are the fans feeling about those uniforms at the moment? Because they were a huge hit when you debuted them.
Yeah, no, those uniforms have been a massive success. I think beyond even my expectation. You know, we do these city editions with Nike every year, and every year we have to come up with sort of a new concept, new idea. And it's always been a good training ground to try new concepts and ideas that if they work, maybe we can bring into the other three uniforms. But this one is honestly 10 times more popular than any other uniform that we've done. So with our fans, they're very excited. And I think to your point with the players, like, we always want to dispel any potential superstitions that could start. And so far, so good with that. The players seem to like them as well.
I mean, it is such a only in Portland thing, right? Like the entire PDX carpet movement is has taken on such a life of its own. Whose brainchild was it to incorporate it with bring it into the team and incorporate it in the uniform?
It's funny. Yeah. We have so many good folks on our creative team. I don't want to try to name names because I think these ideas often get brought up in these brain trust meetings that we have, and it just kind of goes from there. But our marketing creative team's really, really talented, really excited to come up with that. I think it was, you could blame me for why it's taken so long, because I think for me, it was like, you know, I get the PDX carpet thing. And over the years, we had sold a lot of merchandise with that design on it. And it had done really, really well. And we're like, hey, let's put this on a uniform. And yeah, it's been gangbusters for us ever since. So, you know, you never know which of these things are going to go off. And then the second most popular uniform is from a few years ago. It's the brown uniform that's really, highly polarizing as well. So
the quick story about those was when you guys debuted them, I was living in Los Angeles covering the Lakers. But like, I've always had such a fondness for, you know, being from Oregon, and I love Oregon, and I loved that branding, and I loved the script Oregon, obviously from the white stag sign. And I was like, how can I get something in this without appearing biased or appearing, you know? And so I got the slides. And so the slide sandals that say, you know, ORE on the right foot and GON on the left foot. And I could wear those around LA and nobody had any idea that it was Blazers gear, because I thought that was great, great branding. So it makes sense. Fantastic. And I understand why those are popular as well. So the reason we are doing this now and not a couple of weeks ago, is that you have been very busy with not the Blazers, but with the Phil Knight Invitational and Phil Knight Legacy tournaments that were in Portland over Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm curious, because I mean, that's obviously a massive undertaking. Is it 18 teams that came in to your facility?
16 men's teams and eight women's teams.
So, yeah. Okay, so 24 teams total. I'm curious how you guys view the success, or how you judge the success of an event like that, because there are, you know, there was a lot of talk about attendance for those tournaments, and on TV it looked like there were a lot of empty seats. Obviously it's a holiday tournament, so there's probably other factors there. What's your view of that event, and how did you guys gauge the success of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, obviously you always want to try to fill every seat. That's my goal every game. I'll look around a Blazers game, and if there's a patch of empty seats somewhere in the 300 level, I'm like, why didn't we sell those seats? With the college tournaments themselves, I think it's much more about the platform. It's much more about creating the opportunity for the sport to thrive and succeed, and especially in the case of women's sports, right? I think we were the only tournament of the major holiday tournaments to have both a men's and women's bracket represented. And there were some, so talk about some of where these women's tournaments had been held over the holiday weekend that maybe weren't what people thought they should be. And so we took a lot of pride in providing an outlet for women's tournaments to be played, not only on the great stage of the Moda Center Championship Sunday. Both championship games for the women and the men were on Moda Center's court, but then also those games, men's and women's, were on nationally televised ABC, ESPN. So I think it was more about the success of that and the legacy and really honoring Phil, because, you know, it's because of we wanted to celebrate him and his 85th birthday that we brought all these teams together and all these really high-powered programs to be able to play each other. And then the legacy of it, too, is just how much it shook up the top 25, because there were so many games that happened, wins and losses and things. So we view it as really successful from that standpoint. And yes, we'd always like to sell more seats, but it's a positive event for the city, for all of the fans that come into the city to help dispel the myth that Portland is this place that they can't come to, and just put these college programs on the stage that they were on.
Yeah. I mean, there's some themes there that we're going to get into, you know, in terms of events and like you said, you know, Portland's reputation at this moment, which I think is kind of coming out of a kind of a darker period. But I've been curious because you and I had lunch earlier this year and we got into a conversation about Phil Knight's memoir, Shoe Dog. Mm-hmm. I know you'd been listening to it while running. I'm just curious, to go from, reading that book and then having an integral role in putting on that tournament in his honor. Any lessons from reading Shoe Dog that have kind of become part of your thinking as a sports business executive? And did you have a chance to connect with Phil over the weekend and get him to sign your book, maybe?
No. Yeah, no, I actually didn't get a chance to connect with him over the weekend. I think in terms of the book, like what you can admire about Phil is like really having put Oregon on the map. And so what I can appreciate is the reason that we're able to have not even arguably, the biggest college basketball tournament is because of all the things that Phil has built to get Oregon on the map this way. So that really was, I think, the driving force behind it, and really helps you appreciate, Nike and the things he's built and the programs that have such affection for him.
So yeah, you talk about big basketball tournaments. There will be more in the future, but maybe none bigger than in 2030 when Portland hosts the women's Final Four, which was announced right before the PK tournaments, which I'm assuming was not a coincidence of the timing. But I guess could you sort of speak to what it means for Portland to finally host an event of that magnitude? I know that there have been efforts for a long time. What does it mean to the city and to you guys to be able to kind of put on, and prepare for an event like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been a lot of years in the making. Like, and there's so many folks that played a role in this, Sport Oregon and Jim Etzel, his team, our team, to help this. Like, we've had first rounds of NCAA tournaments to kind of say, hey, we can do this. We've had bids before for the women's Final Four and have kind of seen them get passed over. So when we found out the news and we knew it was going to come out, that week of, and we still didn't know if we were going to be the team. So to find out that we were going to do it and get to be able to do it, that was going to be in 2030 when we believe we'll have a lot of these renovations, set to go is really exciting. I remember I sent a note to Jody right after we got the announcement, just saying how excited we were from that standpoint. And she was excited. And, it's just this opportunity to be able to host this event, which is huge for women's sports. Portland, I think, does a phenomenal job supporting women's sports, maybe than most other major cities. And so be able to have that here in Portland at the Moda Center really does help get the idea across that we are more than willing and ready to host big events. And, another event that I'll speak to is Lizzo. Lizzo had two shows in Portland, and there was only two other cities that got two Lizzo shows, and they were New York and LA. So Portland can come out in droves for the right kind of event.
It's got you feeling good as hell.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned something that I think that I would be remiss not to follow up on, which is that you had shared the news with Jody Allen, who obviously owns the Blazers and obviously kind of inherited this team and the obviously the Rose Quarter from her brother. What is her involvement like? And you said, she was excited about 2030, and there's been so much talk about Jody's ownership, and I don't expect you to, speak necessarily to those plans, but we don't know Jody. We don't get to see her very often, beyond sitting courtside. You work with her regularly. What is that dynamic like? And kind of what has it been like sort of learning her vision for these things?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's funny you say that. We're talking about uniforms here, and two nights ago during the Lakers game, we were emailing back and forth, a bunch of us on the uniforms for 24, 25. So it's still a couple of years out. And so I won't share any details about what those uniforms may look like, but she's involved enough to have opinions and thoughts on how those uniforms should look. And she's got really great thoughts and advice. She mentioned that one looked like gift wrapping. And once she said that, I couldn't unsee it. And so we went away from that design. But she's really involved. Jody's the type of person that, she wants actions to speak louder than words. And so, things that she's done organizationally to help us get to the place that we are now, she's done a lot. And I think her big thing is creating a really good environment, having leaders like Joe and myself who she believes knows what we're doing and can lead and can keep her updated and apprised. And she's great to go to get advice from. Those times when we're sitting together at games is sort of 2.5 hours of time to bounce any and all ideas off of her. And she's been really supportive. She's been incredibly supportive. She had a lot to do with obviously getting this building built over here and pointing to the Moda Center. She had a lot to do with, MoPop and CenturyLink, Lumen Field, I'm sorry. So, she's been in it, but she's never had this and probably never desired to have this spotlight role placed on her. And I think that's potentially been viewed as, someone who's not engaged when, the emails, texts, and things that go back and forth between, me, Joe, her, and Bert, I've all been, would tell a different story, would tell someone that is engaged.
You mentioned the building, and you use the word renovations, right? Mm-hmm. And what is your long-term vision for the Moda Center and what it's going to look like? I remember when it was built. I remember going to games the first year. Like, if it's an old arena, that means I'm old. So I don't like to think of it as an old building, but I've also been to the other 27 NBA arenas or 28 arenas. And I do recognize a little bit of that gap is. What do you see as the Moda Center needing the most, and what's a timeline for getting there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's the Moda Center and it's the Rose Quarter district itself. Right. And so we've seen plans from folks like Albina, and they've done a really great job of wanting to reintegrate their neighborhood mm-hmm. into this space. For a little bit of a history lesson is that obviously the I-5 coming in and the VMC coming in the 60s displaced a lot of people in the Black community in Portland. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real need to kind of acknowledge that. And Albina's put some really interesting plans forward. We also have some interesting thoughts that we're starting to put together now about what this district could be. It's this interesting place where people come here when there are events, and when there are not events, it's a bit of a ghost town down here. And we would desire for the Rose Quarter to be sort of fertile ground for development and other things to happen. But we also recognize that when you have an arena surrounded by big parking lots, it's not going to create that space. So it really starts stepping outside, looking at what the Rose Quarter district could be, what it could turn into. And then you turn in and say, okay, well, you've got the convention center right over here. Within walking distance, you've got the Coliseum, which obviously hosts a lot of great events, the Blazers Moda Center, which hosts a ton of events. And in that, in that pocket, you get so many people that come from all over the place, and that's their impression of Portland. So should it be something different? And I think that's the question we're answering now. As for the Moda Center, there's a lot, I think, of work that it needs. I would say with the club level has really an area that could be addressed, that could be a more high premium space. You've seen teams do these bunker suites in their arenas, which are interesting ideas, things that we've looked at. Our event level, we're kind of running out of space in terms of premium spaces that could be down there. A scoreboard, would be a great upgrade for us. another one that we talked about and you see in other arenas is an exterior sort of lobby where fans don't have to wait in the cold and the rain to get their ticket scanned. They could be inside a building. So those are all the things that we've kind of sorted through now. For timing, you know, we're pushing everything to be ready, I think, for 2030, right? That's when I've talked about our sort of all-star ready being Rose Quarter 2030 vision. And we already have the Final Four, which kind of fell on that year. And we'd love to be ready for an all-star game right around that same time because, you know, that feels like there's enough time there to get the renovations that we need to do. Because likely it'd be a two-year during the off-season kind of thing if we did it. And we just need to figure out when that starts.
Yeah, the all-star thing is interesting that the city of Portland has never hosted an all-star game in 50 years as a franchise. It's just a little mind-boggling, especially when you consider, you know, where the All-Star game has been. I mean, the NBA draft has been in Portland, right. Believe it or not. Like Shaq was drafted first overall in Portland, which is a piece of trivia that I only learned this year. But the idea that there hasn't been an All-Star game here, you know, it sounds like that's a pretty high priority for you.
Yeah. I mean, and it has been in the past for us. Right. And I think, for us, it's just, you know, whether the Blazers have been here 52 years, we've sold out nearly every game. The fan base here, obviously long before I was here, fell in love with this team and has loved this team for such a long time. And it's just the fans deserve it more than anything. They deserve to see the best of the best come to Portland and be able to watch that game. And then further, just the Allen family, Jody and Paul, have owned this team and have invested in the NBA, invested in the community for the past 30-plus years. And, you know, as a recognition of, you know, their ownership and their stewardship of the franchise, I think it would just be great to have that game here as well. So it really is a priority in that sense. And, you know, we're looking for ways to showcase Portland. I think, you know, a lot of your window into how a city is doing can be through the sports franchises, right? Like no one would know where Green Bay, Wisconsin was, albeit for the Packers. Portland's been through some rough times in during the pandemic and coming out of it, we can be the lens that helps people realize that Portland is back on its feet and is coming out of this. And so that's something we take a lot of pride in.
That's actually something I talked to folks at Portland State University about earlier this fall, because, you know, Portland State holds, you know, so much of, you know, the downtown, you know, might be the largest landowner in downtown Portland, you know, and has events, has college basketball and has, you know, other sporting events. You know, a lot of them also happen out in Hillsborough, but in terms of, you know, basketball games at PSU, I know Portland State, you know, also views themselves as a conduit to helping, you know, restore the image of Portland. And I think that, you know, it's notable that you see that the same way. Are there other ways that you guys can do that? Or is it really focused on like building up the Rose Quarter, building up, you know, the arena and putting on, you know, world-class events that people are going to travel for?
No, there's other ways for sure. Our community impact, the things that we do to help lift the community around us, our diversity, equity, inclusion work has certainly played a role in all of that. It's the concerts and events we've had. This will be a record-breaking year in terms of total concerts and events. So the amount of people that we're bringing downtown. Now, Blazers fans generally come from a 25-mile radius around the arena to come to games, but concert goers come from all over the state and into Washington. So, you know, we are the postcard, for lack of a better word, of people's viewpoint of downtown. So it's those things. And then I would say also, you know, it's just it's being really good stewards of what the organization stands for on the outside. Like I know people always go to the I don't like this term, but the Jailblazers era, I don't think it's aged that well, but there was always a lot of reticence about that era, because that era made Portland look maybe worse than it was. Like if you knew the Portland for anything, you knew it for its team, and the team was maybe an embarrassment to what the city was doing. So we really, really need to stand on really high moral ground about what kind of organization we are, who our leaders are, who our players are. And again, that one comes directly from Jody, and that's really important to her. And so I think that you see that play out, you know, hopefully with people like Joe and I, with Damian, with Chauncey, those kinds of things.
When we're talking about Moda Center and kind of the vision there, it is to renovate and not replace, right? I mean, is there any thought to a whole new, you know, from the ground up arena with, I mean, I know like you mentioned the Coliseum. I mean, that location has always been a little bit of a boondoggle, frankly, for those who want to use that space differently. Is the vision of the organization with Moda Center to work within the existing footprint?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for us, our peer arenas, which are, you know, Cleveland, Chicago in a way, those arenas that are about our age that have had major renovations. We feel like there is enough of a footprint here and enough of good structure, good bones, that a renovation could accomplish the things that we would need to do on at least on this campus. And it's such a good space. You know, we think about the Coliseum. It is, you know, it's an interesting opportunity, and there have been many people that have tried to bring different ideas to what the Coliseum could and should be. We're kind of thinking about that as well. But we don't have any, you know, we don't have anything we're ready to share in that regard. I think for us, the other one I'd add is WNBA, which is a real possibility here for Portland, I think, at some point. And we want to have, I mean, ideally that team would play, I think, in the Moda Center. Surely they could play in the Coliseum, but it's a major league sport that should be in a major league arena. And so that's an opportunity that I think we look at as well as in terms of a renovation, because there would need to be some renovations to get ready for that.
And by the way, I just want to make sure you know that you are following in good footsteps on the Sports by Northwest podcast, because a few episodes ago we had Jackie Stiles, who was the star of the Portland Fire. The last time the Portland had a WNBA team, she joined us a couple months ago. But she was very pro bringing the WNBA back to Portland. So, and I know those efforts are afoot, and I think that they've been, while it's not the Blazers who are sparking that effort, there is a partnership or kind of working in tandem with the ownership group that's hoping to bring a team here.
Yeah. I mean, just us kind of saying, look, we would fully and wholly support this and think it could be successful and would want to do whatever we could to help it succeed. Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like as you know, with the Blazers, I mean, the last year has been such a, my word would probably be tumultuous year, you know, in terms of, you know, change in both of the top management positions with both you and Joe, coming internally, but, you know, moving into those top chairs. You had a, you know, coach hired and fired. There was some uncertainty about Damian. You know, it seems like all that stuff is sort of settled. Is that your view? I mean, is the team in a more stable place, I guess, than it might have felt 8 months ago?
Yeah. 100%. That's the case, I think. And for any new person like me coming into the role, it's going to feel unstable anyway, because you're learning on the job, but it certainly feels more stable than it's been. And it's really a credit to having really good communication between first Joe Chauncey and myself, but then also in through ownership. You know, things can feel great when you're 10-4, right? Everyone's riding high, but when you're 11-11, you find out what kind of team you are. And yesterday we had a nice long call just talking about the team and the business and all those things. And it's such an open communication style where everyone puts everything on the table and we talk about it all and we tackle it together, because ultimately we're all in it together. And so, I find it to be really, really helpful, refreshing, supportive, and, you know, it's, I don't know what it's been like, because this is my first year ever being in this role, but it really, I think, creates an environment where people can thrive and are about the right things. And even if the results on the court aren't exactly, you know, where they wanted to be over the last few games, like, we know that we're building things the right way. And at the end of the day, you know, to be 11-11 with the hardest schedule in the league and all these road games, like, I think Joe would say, and I don't want to speak for him, that he'd kind of take where we are. We always want to get better, but pretty happy to be in this place. And for the first time in a while, I think fans feel a sense of real positivity about the future of the team that maybe they didn't have before.
Dwayne, it's been a weird couple of years with the pandemic, and fans have obviously, you know, been physically removed from the team in a way that they haven't been. And then obviously, you know, disruption with the roster and all that. Are there ways for you guys to engage fans in ways maybe you haven't in the past, whether it's watch parties or something else?
Yeah, I think we've tried to do that pretty actively. I mean, if you go back, and I don't want to relay this, but it's, you know, it's almost been now 3 years since the pandemic. So the season shuts down, we play in a bubble. Our fans don't have access to that except through broadcast. Then we have almost a whole season with no fans except for the end when we can have 1,000. And then we have the playoffs where we had half full. And then last year we still had big, heavy restrictions in terms of people being vaccinated or, or wearing masks to games, which, you know, not a lot of people were thrilled about. And so everything that we could end the team, of course, didn't perform on the court the way we all anticipated. So we came into this year and thought, okay, what are ways that we can really help the fans get closer to the team? And I do think one of the things that I'd like to give kudos to one of our teams on is the Trail, this episodic docuseries that we've rolled out in the last month and a half. Now, that the goal with that really was to get fans to understand our players off the court and really understand what they're about and understand the camaraderie and togetherness that Chauncey talks about that we're fostering, and to understand also and meet the staff that helps work on the team side as well. And so we felt like that's been a window for fans that they didn't have in the past. Having fans come back to the game, we don't have any more restrictions, and our crowds have been much, much better this year. We're averaging, 17, I think it's a little over 17 or under 18,000 fans per game, which has been great. So that feels like it's bounced back. And then the broadcast is always so important to us. You know, we're one of the few teams that gets to do whatever we want on our broadcast, which can be good and can be bad, right? But from a production standpoint, we've really tried to help our fans understand the game more than ever. We feel like we have some of the best talent there is with Brooke, Kevin, and Lamar, and we've really wanted to raise the production value of our broadcast because Lamar does such a good job telling about the things that happen on the court. We wanted to kind of back that up with data and stats and have really tried to do that to make our fans, some of the smartest in the NBA.
And so you've done that with integrated stats, on the floor. You know, you have access to, there's a service called Second Spectrum that you guys have been able to pull stats in real time for and put it on, whether it's, anybody who watches the games knows, Anthony Simons has the ball and he is at the 3-point line and you see that he shoots 37% and then he drives with his left hand and you see his shooting percentage in that exact scenario change in real time. I mean, it's pretty slick. I'm wondering what the fan feedback has been to that, because not every fan is an analytics minded mm-hmm. consumer to having it on the screen like that. But then also you've brought in Corey Jez, who is an analytics expert, and you've integrated him into the broadcast, sort of like the way an NFL or college football broadcast brings in like a referee mm-hmm. expert, and had him kind of come in to try to explain some of this stuff. What has been the feedback on those two things?
Yeah, I think generally good. I think where we're hitting at the core of it is those really core hardcore basketball fans. They're super excited about it. And then I think we're getting people who are on the outside of that fan base to be a little bit more curious about those numbers and those stats and just sort of the story that's happening on the court. So like anything, I think these things we're going to try. I think what we've committed to is maybe part of our namesake here, but we're going to try things, and if they fail fast, and if they work out, we're going to keep adding them and inserting them in, all with the goal of having, the best broadcast in the league. We actively don't want to have, a broadcast that maybe looks like sort of every other broadcast could look. And so what are the things that we can do to educate fans, bring things forward? We've also added some social components so fans can vote. They can feel like they can get in on the game and they can have a voice at the game. Having a second screen experience while you're watching the game, I think is going to be really important. TV ratings for lots of reasons in the RSN world are going down. But one of them is like, how are we really helping our fans stay engaged? How easy are the games to watch? All those sorts of things. And so, we are willing to do all the things we need to make the game feel not just like an experience that we're delivering to you, but an experience that you can be a part of.
Just as a fan of the team, because I think that in order to be in your business, you have to, mm-hmm. you have to have a love of the games and the team. I know we mentioned that, the record has evened out a little bit, which was probably to be expected. I don't think that anybody thought that you guys that the Blazers were going to win, 75% of their games this season. It's been a pretty fun group, Dwayne. Yeah. It's been a pretty fun group of players. And, obviously Dame's missed quite a bit of time with injuries, but I'm assuming this has been fun for you as well. I mean, this is a very obvious question, but do you like this team? Has this been a fun team to be around, especially in your first full year in this role?
Yeah, it really has. And again, I'm an observer, right, on all this stuff, but just the way, Chauncey has helped build that togetherness, not just say it mm-hmm. in press conferences, but actually build it, and you see it and you feel it, and you know, at the end of every game, win or loss, there's a lineup of people giving high fives to the players and to each other, and there's a real camaraderie that is, I think, unique in sports among the value between the business side, which is, you know, where I'm primarily focused, in the basketball side, where yeah. Joe and Chauncey are focused, to be on the same page, to feel that connectedness, even among our different business units, I think has been really, really positive. And, you know, it takes leaders to understand that not only they bring that value, but they see the value that others bring. And you see that unfold, I think, on the court. Like, everybody knows their role. Everybody knows how they can succeed. And it just makes it so fun to watch. And our fans, you know, the players that they've loved since I've been here, and all the players that, you know, win or lose, give their best effort, dive on the floor when it's needed, do those things on defense. And you kind of see that with this team. And it makes it really easy for us to market the story of the team to our fans, and our fans are excited about it.
Dwayne, one thing that fans may not know about you, or maybe fans are still getting to know you, is that you actually have a degree in journalism and mass communications from Iowa State University. There's probably a long story about how you ended up on the business side, from starting out on the mass communication side, but I just want to know, like, for your feedback as somebody who, you know, has a degree in this stuff, like, how has this podcast been? Like, how have I done as an interviewer?
You've done phenomenal. You're objective. You inject opinion when needed, and you've led a really thoughtful conversation. I appreciate it.
Why aren't you here? Why aren't you a sports writer? Why are you on the business side?
It's funny. I went to school for computer engineering at Iowa State, and I did that for a year. And I thought, well, I don't know if I want to do this. And I didn't know what I wanted to do after that. And no one in my family had gone to college, so there wasn't really a path. And journalism was what stuck out to me. And there was a movie called Almost Famous that I loved, loved, still my favorite movie. And I was like, I think I want to do that. And then just throughout graduating, I got more realistic about my career and what I could do. And I didn't know you could work for a sports team. I honestly just didn't know that was a thing. And so when I found that out and I just got my start in minor league baseball, everything just kind of grew from there. And I, you know, blessed, I feel like lucky and blessed to be able to do this job. I know that's a hokey thing to say, but it's been a really fun experience these last, 20 years.
Well, and I feel the same way. So, you know, Dwayne, I really appreciate, I'm glad that journey has brought you here to the Sports by Northwest podcast. Really appreciate all of your insights on everything around, not just the Trailblazers, but, you know, the Rose Garden, the Moda Center and Rose Quarter and the future of that space and events in Portland. I think, you know, obviously Portland continues to grow as a sports city and, you know, has a lot of exciting opportunities ahead. So we look forward to, you know, seeing what you guys are able to do with those things. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for your time.
Yeah. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
I would like to thank Dwayne Hankins for joining the Sports by Northwest podcast this week. A lot of great insight on kind of the future of sports in Portland and the state of Oregon, I think. Subscribe to Sports by Northwest for more interviews like this one. Leave a review and rating wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back next week, probably, with more interesting conversations about sports all around Oregon, Portland. That's why it's called Sports by Northwest. Thanks for listening.